The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your Legal Shield associate, connect you to a legal insurance plan that's right for you. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about $20 a month.
That price is insane.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for all you critical thinkers out there, and everyone else too. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical professional before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you'll find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I'm going to jump right into an email that I received from someone I'm going to call Wanda. And Wanda says, "Hey, Paul, I absolutely love your podcast. I've dealt with anxiety and depression for a while now, and your podcast has really helped me deal with some of my issues. There's one thing that has me stuck. I'm in a relationship with a man that I love very much. When we first started dating, I felt things I never felt before. He, of course, isn't perfect. He has a child, and the child's mother is rather unstable. Through your podcasts, I've been able to deal with some of my emotions surrounding this situation, and I feel like I'm in a better place with the whole thing. However, I still feel myself thinking about this woman often. It's like my go-to state of mind is to think about her. I don't often worry about her anymore. Rather, my brain just thinks about her name, almost like a nervous tic. I feel a little bit crazy for this, and I'm not sure how to stop it. It's like the more I want to stop this behavior, the more it happens. I'm hoping you have some advice for me. Thanks." All right. Thanks, Wanda. Thanks for sharing that and asking that question. I think it's a great topic to open the show with and talk about. And what I want to do is let's give this woman a name, because we're going to play with this thought for a moment. I'm going to call this woman Jackie, this woman that your mind goes to. If her real name is Jackie, I'm sorry, I didn't know. But let's just call her Jackie, just so I can call her something while I talk about it. So your question is very valid. Like, you keep thinking of someone. And it's not like driving you insane, but it sort of is. And it's like a nervous tick, like you said. Like, boom, there's her name. There's Jackie. Boom, there's Jackie. Hey, I'm washing dishes, and there's Jackie. So where I go with this is that there's usually a resistance, and you've probably heard me say before, if you've been listening to the show and you've heard this all over the world, that what you resist persists. So I like to go in the opposite direction of resistance and welcome instead. But I also like to do something with what I welcome. So in your case, you have someone that we're calling Jackie that keeps popping in your mind. And you're like, I don't want this woman to pop in my mind, but she does. And on top of that, your husband has to probably deal with her too, because they share a child together. So she is going to pop in your mind, just like my girlfriend's ex-husband pops in my mind every now and then. It's because there's still a connection, because she is also sharing custody with her ex-husband. So there's a connection. There's no way out of that. So I think step one for you is to accept that there's a connection and there's no way out of it, ever. I'm not saying that it's 100% true, that there's never not going to be a connection, but just come to an acceptance in yourself that there will never be a disconnect, that there will always be a connection, that she will always be in your life as long as your husband is in your life. They made a child, and I assume, or maybe I'm wrong, but they probably share custody, or at least communicate about that child and have to arrange things for that child. I don't know your whole situation there. But one way or another, she's connected to you through him. So there has to be an acceptance. If you don't accept it, then you will drive yourself crazy. Then what you resist will persist. It will nag at you. It will be a nervous tick. It'll be that sliver that you can't get out of your finger. It's just, it's always there, and you're trying to dig at it and dig at it. And the more you dig at it, the deeper it goes. So sometimes, or often, when you allow it to sit there, the sliver works its way out because the skin grows underneath it or something. Not always, but that does happen. And to make my metaphor work, I have to tell you that the sliver will work its way out if you just allow it to be. That doesn't mean you don't try to remove the sliver. But let's not talk about slivers. Let's talk about people. So you have this person that keeps popping in your mind, and you're like, okay, I don't want to keep thinking about this person. I have other things to think about. I have other things to do. I want to have a happy thought without this person sneaking in, and hey, there they are. So with the idea that what you resist persists, and I also add amplifies, then what you want to do is, instead of resisting, welcome it. Welcome the thought. This might actually be a Buddhist principle as well. You welcome the thought. You notice the thought. You observe it. And it comes into your life, and you just say, hey, there's that thought. Hey, there's Jackie again. Hey, Jackie. Now, you might have some resentment or resistance toward her as a person, but here's what I want you to do with that. So when you welcome this thought of Jackie, she comes in, hey, Jackie, I didn't know you were coming over. This isn't a good time. This is your brain. I didn't know you were coming over. This isn't a good time. Can we do this later? No, I'm coming in. Great. So what do we do? This is in your mind, thankfully, not for real. If it is for real, that's a whole different scenario. But in your mind, you can do anything you want. You can say, hey, Jackie, come on in. Here, have a seat in this room while I'm making dinner. And then you put her in the closet. And she's sitting there with the broom or the washer and dryer, who knows. And you just lock the door behind you. And, okay, you can stay in there if you want, Jackie. So every time you come over, you can stay in the closet. And she's banging on the door. Come on, don't let me sit in this closet. Well, I didn't expect you. I have nowhere else to put you. This is where you go. This is a little weird, but what you're doing is you're introducing a little comedy into your inner dialogue. Now, when you start doing this over and over again, making different scenarios, pretty soon those nagging thoughts become a humorous addition to your day. You have to be diligent and always add something comical to it, though. So let's just say that she pops in your head and you're like, okay, now what? There's her name again, Jackie. So what I want you to do is, in your mind's eye, go somewhere with Jackie. Hey, Jackie, let's go to the park. and you're walking through the park and Jackie slips in a puddle and ruins her dress. Now, that's kind of a mean thought, but it's your mind. You can do anything you want. And if you don't want her in your mind, then if she keeps visiting, that's going to be what happens to Jackie. So, okay, hey, Jackie, they're in my mind again. Let's go to the movies. And then you go to the movies and she sits down and she sits on gum. And now she's looking under her seat and there's gum stuck to her butt. So now Jackie's upset, and I don't know if that makes you happy or not. I don't know what kind of relationship you have with her. But if she's coming into your mind, then welcome her. And then just create some comical scenario so that when she does pop in your mind, you can have a little fun with it. What'll happen after that is the more welcome and the more fun you have with it, she will eventually disappear from your thoughts. Because my thought is that someone doesn't appear in your thoughts unless there's something about them that is significant to you. I'm going to guess that Jackie is probably very insignificant to you, which makes her significant, in a way. Because one thing you said is that she's unstable. So there's some sort of judgment there. I'm not saying it's a false judgment. I'm saying it could be a very true judgment. There could be an emotional imbalance in her, or she may do things that are just kind of out of sorts or unorthodox or looks a little crazy to the rest of the world. That could all be true. But I want you to welcome, if she appears in your mind's eye in some way, just say, hey, oh, okay, you're here. Let's do something. And then when you do it, it becomes comical and you get a laugh out of it. Because I have a feeling when she pops in your mind, you're not getting any laugh out of it. You're like, what the hell is she doing back? Why are you back? I don't want to keep thinking of you. So the idea is you're kind of poisoning the water for that thought to keep returning. You're treating that thought as if it were a real person that keeps visiting you. And because it's in your mind, you can do anything and play any scenario that you want. Okay, she visits and you make this scenario up and then she leaves with something that made you laugh. I'm not saying everything has to be mean-spirited, or I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying whatever makes you laugh, because adding laughter to something that might not feel too good in the first place can often negate the thought from happening at all. And that's where I'm going with this, is that eventually, as you welcome it, as it becomes funny, whatever you felt that's negative gets negated by something positive, something funny, and then the thought just kind of disappears on its own. And then one day you'll go a whole day without thinking of her at all. And then maybe 2 days will go by. And then maybe you'll have 3 days and then your husband will mention her name. Or you'll see something that reminds you of her. But it won't be so pervasive. So that's what I want you to do with that. Now, one other thing that you'll want to do for yourself is figure out what sort of negativity you hold against her. I'm not saying you have any negativity against her, but I want you to explore it anyway. If you felt anything toward her, what would it be? If there's any bitterness, if there's any anger, if there's any jealousy that she's somehow still connected to your husband, I want you to explore that in yourself, because if something's there, you know, usually a thought will repeat itself when there's some sort of unresolved emotion behind the thought. So maybe it's not so much that she exists and she keeps popping in your mind. Maybe it's because there's an unresolved emotion inside of you that hasn't been addressed yet, that might need to be processed and released. And you might have to come to a welcoming of that emotion. Like, what emotions come up for you? Is there any bitterness? Is there any anger? Is there something going on inside of you? Maybe you think, oh, if she just stopped behaving the way she behaves, then our lives would be better. That could be true. And if that is true, what emotions do you have going on with that statement? You can say something like, when she behaves that way, I feel what? When she does this, when she says this, it makes me feel what? And you explore that. And what you come up with will be what you can start working on. Because 99 out of 100 times, when you work on what comes up regarding other people, those other people tend to disappear from your life in one way, shape, or form. She may still be connected to your husband, which makes her connected to you, but whatever bothered you about her starts to go away. It starts to not exist anymore because the emotions inside of you have been resolved. That's a great way to approach this as well, is that if all that other stuff I talk about fails, then explore that emotion and try to figure out what you're feeling inside, because there may be something that you need to address. Sure, there are people out there that will drive us crazy no matter what, but there's a place we go inside of us to allow that to happen. We may think we're not allowing it to happen, but most of the time we do allow people to bother us. Like somebody comes up and continues to talk to you and talk to you and talk to you, and you're like, I'm late, I gotta go, and they keep talking to you and talking to you and talking to you, and then you're like, I'm looking at my watch and this person's not getting it, and I'm trying to give them every signal. And then I even said, I gotta go. And they're like, okay, before you go, let me tell you this other thing, and talking to you. And then pretty soon you're really bothered. But is it them that's bothering you, or is it your inability to honor your personal boundaries to the point where you can be very clear about what you need to do and how someone else is violating your time or violating your personal space or whatever they're doing? Is it really them? Or is it them triggering something in you that you need to process, that you need to strengthen, that you need to work on? You'll often find that, especially when someone's name keeps coming up in your head. So all these things that you can do, Wanda, did I call you Wanda? all these things that you can do that will give you some tools to work with so that maybe Jackie just kind of fades away. Now, if she's in your physical presence a lot, you might see her more often. But like I said, after you process some of the emotions inside of you, then her presence, even physically close to you, as long as she's not physically touching you or something, but even her proximity won't affect you at least as badly when you work on this stuff in yourself. At least that's the goal, is you get to a point where you can be close to someone and them still not bother you. You still may not like them, and you're allowed to. You're allowed to not like someone. But when they bother you to the point of you can't stop thinking about them, that's when you want to do something about it. You're just like, I got to get past this. And I get that. So I hope this helps, Wanda. Thank you so much for writing this. And let's get to our next segment, which I read another letter and see where we can go with it. Be right back. I want to tell you about getoutofthemess.com. The last time Asha was on the show, she sang a song. And I didn't talk about Get Out of the Mess. I mentioned it a little bit. But Asha is a representative for Legal Shield. And this is a service that I use, that Asha uses. And she's had many calls on regarding, you know, what can this service do for me? What can I do? Can I use it for my divorce? Can I use it for my speeding ticket? Can I use it for that company that keeps calling me and telling me I owe them money and I already told them I paid it off? It's like that company that called Asha and said, you owe on this timeshare. And she's like, no, I don't. I already paid that timeshare. That timeshare went to my ex-husband in the divorce. I don't owe anything on it. And they said, we don't care. You're going to pay us for it. They didn't care. They were bullies, and there's a lot of bullies out there. And, you know, sometimes that is the debt collector's job to bully until they get the money. I understand that. I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's what they do. They bully until, some of them bully until they get the money. So she decided to call Legal Shield, and a lawyer called her back within like an hour or two, and she told him what was happening. And the lawyer's like, great, I'll write something up, I'll send it to them, and they'll leave you alone. And she's like, great. And that's exactly what he did. And she never heard from the collectors again. She shouldn't have heard from them in the first place. It was a ridiculous claim and they probably knew that she had nothing to do with it, but they were seeking anyone to pay the bill. And since her name was once on it, they went for her. And some people will get scared and they'll buckle and they'll say, okay, I'll pay. And they pay and then they lose out and the debt collector wins and they get the money for their client and their client's happy and everyone on that side's happy and you feel drained of dignity, drained of money, and you're glad it's over, but then you think, what just happened? I just got bullied. What is this? And that shouldn't happen. Just because you're a single entity, you should not be bullied by anyone or company. Yes, there are times when you have responsibilities and obligations, morally and contractually, and you take care of those times. You do have to take care of your stuff. But what about when it's not your fault? What about when you've done everything right, yet you still get thrown under the bus? That's not fair. And that's why I want you to contact Asha. Call her at 678-355-8777 and ask her about this service and if it's right for you. She can connect you with Legal Shield and get you a plan that works for you, your family, or if you own a business, you and your employees. There's a whole lot of benefits to this plan, and I never want you to feel like you're being pushed around, bullied, or made to think that you're wrong when you know you're right. So if you're in the U.S. or Canada, give Asha with getoutofthemess.com a call. 678-355-8777. All right, welcome back. I'm going to read you another email. We're just going to get right into it. This is from someone I'm going to call Mary. Hey, Paul, I've been listening to your podcast for quite some time and it has done so much for me. I'm not sure if you've spoken to this subject previously, but I was wondering if you can address the issue of being condemned or disliked by your spouse's parents. I love my significant other to death, and we met when we were younger and less socialized and didn't think anything odd of our love for one another. As we have aged, we have noticed that we are completely opposite in the socioeconomic aspect. He comes from a well-off family and has a degree, while I do not. We have a very mature and loving relationship and didn't seek each other for superficial reasons. However, his mother, I put the emphasis on that, is indifferent towards me and even says contentious statements. I'm now doubting both myself and our relationship, and I don't want to associate with her because of it. I feel as though everything I do is magnified, and any and all mistakes would further contribute to the idea that I am unfit for her son. He reassures me that he would never marry a woman just because of a degree or money, and he says he loves me for me. I believe we have both overcome our own narcissism and see each other for who we are, but I'm afraid our relationship will continue to be vilified for shallow reasons. How can I cope with feeling invalidated by his family? Thank you so much. All right, Mary, that is an excellent question. I'm glad you asked it. One, because I want to see if I can help you. And two, because it's just a great subject matter to talk about, because I'm sure somebody in the listening audience has had to deal with this or is dealing with it right now. And if that's the case, this is for you. First thing I want to comment on is when you are in a committed relationship, a marriage, or you've been together a long time, when there's a commitment and you love your partner and your partner loves you back and you want to be together for as long as you can possibly be together, then what you're creating is a family. Even if it's just the two of you, it's your family. It's you and your partner and or your kids. And when you create a family, you create a unit. You create a structure, a foundation. And that foundation, in order for your marriage to progress and continue to be strong and healthy, then you must protect the foundation. you have to protect that commitment or marriage foundation. If you don't, or if one of you doesn't, then the relationship goes rocky. It starts to list, like a ship sinking. It starts to list. And when that happens, things get worse. They don't get better. Because one or both of you is helping to sink the ship. Now, what I'm about to say is a personal opinion, and it may not be acceptable to some people. It may be downright disagreeable to some people, but this is where I go when it comes to your partner's parents or anyone in your partner's family that seems to not support or interfere in some way. Your responsibility is to your partner. Your partner's responsibility is to you. Both of your responsibility is to your foundation. Both of your responsibility is to the relationship. So what does that mean? That means if someone comes along and tries to set your foundation on fire, do you allow it to happen? Do you just walk away and watch it burn? Or do you try to put it out no matter what? Or do you try to stop the person from setting it on fire? The right answer is you try to stop the person, because that person is a threat to your foundation. That person is trying to crumble your foundation, burn it down. And when someone threatens your foundation, your relationship suffers. So where am I going? I'm going in the direction of when someone has a family that disagrees with your relationship, that person has to choose a side. Again, this is probably advice that won't be popular, but this is my opinion. For example, if my mom hated my girlfriend and she said disparaging things and she said abusive things, and when she talked to my girlfriend, she made her angry and just made her feel bad about herself, what I would do is say, "Mom, you need to back off. This is my girlfriend you're talking about. This is my life. This is my family. I love you, Mom, but if you don't love her, you can feel that way if you want, but don't threaten my happiness. Don't threaten my relationship. Don't threaten my family." That's where I go with that. And I think that's where your husband should go with it too. There's not much more I can say on this. That's truly the end-all be-all. If your husband doesn't want the relationship to falter and fail and crumble to the ground, he has to protect the foundation. And I would say the exact same thing for you. If your family said anything bad about your husband or put your husband down or made him feel bad or disparaged him, I would tell you to tell them to back off. This is my family. This is my foundation. This is who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. You may not like him, but I love him. You have to have that sort of conviction for this dynamic to work out. Otherwise, it doesn't work out. If your husband is afraid to face his family, then your relationship will crumble. Again, this is my opinion. I'm not saying this will absolutely happen, but I can tell you that if he takes a stand and says, "Hey, back off. This is my wife you're talking about. This is my wife you're talking down to. This is my wife you're abusing. You are threatening my relationship." I'm not saying he has to say those words, but if he takes that kind of stand, that's going to change everything, because it's his family. He has to deal with them. Yes, you are now part of his family, but he grew up with them. He is in their blood. It's possible that he could divorce you and he would still have his family. That family will never change for him. So what he needs to do is prove that you and him as a family won't change. And how do you do that? You protect your foundation. You protect that relationship. I don't often get stringent on this show. I don't often give you orders. And this isn't an order. I'm not telling you to do this absolutely. I'm saying that my belief is the only way to get through this and the only way to survive this is for him to stand up and protect the foundation, protect you, protect your relationship, protect your family. Because if he doesn't, I wonder who you'll resent more, his mom or him. I wonder how you'll feel if he never takes a stand for you. It won't feel very good. Now, you didn't tell me if he does this or not, so I'm making some assumptions here. But if he doesn't take a stand for you, the relationship, your family, then you're going to build, if you haven't already, resentment against him. And that's what will drive the wedge between you, not his mother. His mother is a factor in your relationship only because of what is being allowed in the relationship. I can almost guarantee if he says, "Mom, you need to back off. I don't want to hear you talk to her like that ever again," that things would change. And he actually may lose his relationship with his mother. That's why I said he needs to make a choice. If it really is coming down to choosing his new family with you, or keeping his old family, which sounds a little dysfunctional, I don't know for sure, that's just a guess, then he has every right to make a decision one way or another. But you need to know where he stands. This is not necessarily advice for you, but more advice for him. And he may not even listen to this show, but my only advice for you is to be aware where the onus of responsibility lies. It's not his mom. His mom's not going to change. She might, it's possible, but let's just say that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. His mom's not going to change. It's not going to happen. So you have to follow a different angle. You have to follow a different path. And, you know, you can also get to a point where things bounce off of you. You become resilient. You become not bothered by anything that she says, and that's fine and dandy. But since she's probably an integral part of your life and an integral part of his life, and it sounds like you talk to her often, then a stand has to be made or a decision has to be made so that this doesn't continue to deteriorate your relationship. Because I'm pretty sure your relationship's deteriorating considering what you just wrote here. So I hope this helps. I mean, like I said, there's not much else I can tell you here. I really believe that is one of the few, if not the only, solution. He probably doesn't want to do it this way, but in my opinion, it's all about professing your love for the family that you're trying to grow in this world, trying to keep and enjoy and love, because his mom will eventually pass away, and what will he have? He'll have you. He'll have his foundation. He'll have his family. I'm not saying he has to be mean to his mom. I'm just saying he has to honor his boundaries, your boundaries, and the family's boundaries. So I hope I made that clear. I won't exacerbate the point anymore. You get what I'm trying to say. I wish you the best with this. Thank you again for writing. Send me an update if anything changes. If your spouse accidentally hears this show because you accidentally uploaded it to his phone, just let me know. And I hope things go well for you. Thank you again. We'll be right back. All right, I'm going to read another email. This is a packed show. This is from someone I'm going to call Abby. Abby says, I've been listening to your show for quite a while, and today I listened to an episode that I really connected with at a time that I was most receptive. I have a couple questions for you that I was hoping you could shed some light on. In reading about your relationships, which seemed solid and deep for a long period of time, I didn't find any insight into your personality or awareness level in those relationships. However, there seemed to be a great lack of awareness and insight about the relationship and yourself at those times. What insights have you gained about the relationships and your relationship insecurity interactions since these relationships occurred? I would appreciate your insights. Abby. All right, Abby, that is an interesting question. I didn't expect it when I was reading through this earlier, and I had to really consider what you meant. And after rereading it, I think I know what you meant. You said, my relationship seemed solid and deep for a long period of time, but you didn't find any insight into my personality or awareness level and that there seemed to be a great lack of awareness and insight about the relationship and yourself at those times. So I'm going to address that first. When it came to my relationships in the past, I was always a long-term guy. I always wanted a long-term relationship. I never wanted to date. I always just wanted to get into a relationship and stay in one. I didn't want to deal with anything else. Once I got into that relationship and stayed in it, that's what I wanted for the rest of my life. So my personality back then was absolutely loyal and dedicated and making sure that I did everything right so I wouldn't lose the relationship. It actually was a little fear-based. And because I was in a relationship based on the fear that someone might leave me unless I did everything I could to keep them, including being Mr. Nice Guy, not letting anything bother me, not getting angry, then the relationship became dysfunctional. I brought dysfunction into the relationship because I was afraid I'd lose them if I didn't do all the right stuff. So my awareness of my own, like you said, insecurity and interactions was next to nothing. I didn't know I was bringing all this fear. I didn't know any better. I didn't know how to be in a relationship. I mean, how do we learn to be in a relationship? We typically learn from the people who brought us up. I learned from highly dysfunctional, people-pleasing, kind, generous, compassionate mom who enabled an alcoholic, abusive husband as our stepfather. And that's how I learned how to be in a relationship. Oh, you enable the addict. I get it. Oh, you enable the abuser. I get that. I thought that way. And I also thought, oh, you're supposed to please everyone and try to make sure that nobody gets mad at you. And oh, you're not supposed to lose your temper, because if you lose your temper, then your partner may get upset. Oh, you're supposed to do everything your partner says. Otherwise, they may get drunk and hurt you. I mean, these are the beliefs that we take from childhood because of the relationships that we're exposed to. We learn how to relate to others by our relationship with the people that we are growing up around. And so our relationships are what they become based on our past. That's what I did. I brought in dysfunction. I brought in a lot of fear into my relationship because my mom grew up in fear, and us kids grew up in fear because we never knew what to expect. Some of us got it worse than others, and it was not pretty. And we didn't have a good role model for relationships. We had what we had, and then we all got into relationships that failed in one way or another. I think my oldest sister is in maybe the longest relationship of my entire family. I don't know how she did it, but she found a great guy, and she's very compatible with him. And they've lasted a long time, even though I know that she's experienced a lot of hardship along the way. And I'm sure she's had failed relationships in the past that caused her to question, you know, what am I doing wrong in these relationships? Or I keep meeting the wrong guy. Like, maybe she kept meeting our stepfather. You know what they say, like, you marry your mom, you marry your dad. That's because you find someone who's very much like the people that were role models for how to be in a relationship. Those people aren't always functional. Sometimes they're very dysfunctional. And so we bring these perceptions and belief systems into our relationships, which is what I did. So I had, maybe four or five major long-term relationships in my life. And it was mostly fear. My awareness, or unawareness, I should say, was of my fear. And because I feared, I acted differently. Whenever you fear in your relationship, whenever you bring fear and you act from a place of fear, even if you don't know you're fearing, because I didn't know I was fearing, but whenever you're acting from a place of fear, you're going to get different results. You're going to create circumstances in your relationship that don't work out for the best, typically. Now, a fear-based relationship can work. If you are both afraid that you're both going to leave each other, and then maybe you'll people please each other to death, figuratively speaking, but you don't often see two people pleasers together. You often see a people pleaser. I mean, I'm using people pleaser as an example. You often see a people pleaser with someone who takes advantage of people pleasers. That's often what happens. Not always. I was a people pleaser and the women in my life didn't necessarily take advantage of me, but it can happen often. So yes, I was insecure in my relationships. I was so insecure that I didn't want my girlfriend or my wife when I was married to leave. I didn't want them to go out with their friends. I didn't want them talking to other people. Not so much my wife, but previous to my marriage, that was more prevalent. I didn't stop them from doing that stuff, but I felt hurt or scared inside. I felt abandoned inside. I wasn't aware of that then. I just knew that it wasn't right. You know, I had this judgment. It's not right to do that. Or if you go out, I want to know exactly where you're going and what time you'll be home. Or I don't want you to eat that food. I don't want you to get a tattoo. I don't want you to ride a motorcycle. I mean, I had all these thoughts and judgments against the women that I was with, that it was hard for them to live with me. It was hard for them to see me as an equal because I wanted to dominate or control. I shouldn't say dominate, but control. I wanted to control their behavior. I wanted to control their actions because I was afraid, because I was insecure. And so all of my behavior came from that fear. Now you ask, what insights have I gained since these relationships occurred in my life? And I would say one of the most powerful lessons I've learned with relationships in general is when you adopt the attitude that I just want my partner to be happy. When you adopt that philosophy, relationships go so much better. They go so much smoother. That way, whenever I have some sort of disagreement in my mind with anyone I'm with, if I fall back on my philosophy and go, I just want that person to be happy, then that disagreement in my mind usually disintegrates. Like if my girlfriend told me something that I completely disagreed with and I didn't want her to do, I would certainly talk about it and say, hey, I'm not comfortable with that. I won't stop you from doing that, but I certainly won't like it. Because, you know, I have an opinion and I want to express it. And this is my family and I want to have a say in what comes in the family. But if I saw that it would really make her happy, then I would fall back on that philosophy. Now, that doesn't mean that if she did something so disagreeable with me that I had to stay, it doesn't mean I have to stay. It just means that I'm not here to make her miserable. I'm here to make her happy. I'm here to support her happiness. Now, when this works best is when your partner sees the same and feels the same way about you. When your partner looks at you and says, wow, I want you to be happy too. Then when you have a disagreement with your partner, they're going to go, wow, if that would make you unhappy if I did it, then I don't want to do it. I don't want to make you unhappy. So if my girlfriend said, wow, that would really upset you, wouldn't it? I'd be like, yeah, probably would. Then my hope is that she would say, then I won't do it. I mean, she may not, and I'm not going to force her to say that, and I don't expect one way or another, but I would hope. I can have this hope that she would see something that upset me, and then she would go, wow, that really upsets you, so I won't do that anymore. And that can make a relationship work well, because you're supporting each other's happiness. You're supporting each other's path to happiness. And when that's in a relationship, that's when I find it works best. Because think about it. If you have the philosophy that I just want to support my partner's happiness, will you do things that might upset them? You might, but it's not your intention. And you'll have a good ethical and moral check-in system. Like, I really find a coworker attractive. Should I cheat? Wait, that doesn't make my partner happy. That's a problem. I mean, that's an extreme example, but that's a good example of testing your philosophy. Like, if my philosophy is to make my partner happy, then of course I wouldn't do anything that would upset her or him. Of course I'm not going to do this thing to upset this person. I'm not saying I face this in my relationships, but in general, I like to evaluate the things I do against that philosophy. Is this going to upset my partner, or is this going to make my partner happy? It's like you're in the grocery store and you go, I bet my partner would love this. I bet my husband or my wife would love this. I'm going to get it for them. Or are you more like, my partner doesn't like when I drink, but I don't care. I'm an adult. I'm going to drink anything I want, anytime I want. And you bring home a 12-pack of beer. Doesn't make your partner happy, but at least you're getting your way. But I don't really think your relationship's going to grow and prosper and be strong. This is all my personal philosophy. I'm not trying to pound it into you. I'm just saying this is what I've learned about my interactions, about my relationships, and where I go in relationships, is that I like to support the happiness of my partner. It's a huge lesson. And another huge lesson is to turn off my judgments. Because I was so judgmental about the things that my partner did, that obviously doesn't support their happiness. That just makes them want to resent me. That just makes them feel uncomfortable around me. And absolutely, and this is even a bigger realization, is that almost always your partner wants to feel safe with you. And for me, I was highly judgmental in most of my relationships, which made them feel unsafe with me. My partners felt unsafe with me, and my relationships were destroyed because of that. That's not the only reason, but that's, I would say, 90% of it. That was a big reason that my partners never felt safe with me. And if someone doesn't feel safe with you, they can't trust you. They might not believe you. They might feel like you're lying or deceiving them. Or they may not be able to trust that you'll pull through if something happens and you want somebody to protect you and they don't. When you lose the feeling of safety, of trust, because it's such a high-level value in almost all relationships, things will break down. And because I destroyed that safety and trust, my relationships broke down. So now I make sure that my partner always feels safe with me, even when I'm mad. If I get mad and I want to yell, which is rare, but if I have to speak loudly, because I'm trying to emphasize something that I feel strongly about, it's still not to attack. It's only to express myself. As soon as it becomes an attack, and I'm pointing the finger and I'm saying, you're wrong, you're the problem, I'm blaming you, they don't feel safe. Why would they want to stick around with someone who makes them feel like that? They don't feel safe, and then they start feeling bad about themselves. They start not trusting their own decisions, and a lot of other dysfunctions start to appear in them, in you, in the relationship, and it gets worse and worse and worse because it's more one-sided, more controlling, and because you want the love to be there, but it's not there, but it's there sometimes, but it fails because all this other stuff is going on, then it becomes crazy-making and emotionally abusive, and all kinds of things are happening after that point. So I really think that safety is a huge factor in something that I learned along the way after having quite a few hurtful breakups. So that's all I'm going to answer with that. I hope this helps. Thank you, Abby, for writing. That was a great question. I don't often get asked questions like that. I thought it was an interesting exploration on my part, going down that old road of relationships and discovering what I have learned along the way. I hope my lessons in life have helped you as a listener of this show. I hope you gain some wisdom from my experience, and I hope I continue to learn from my own experiences and from the experiences of my coaching clients. I always want to keep learning and understanding so that next time something comes up, I have some more tools, some more resources from which to draw so that I am even better next time around. Hopefully I've learned everything and now this relationship's going to be fantastic and going to last the rest of our lives. But if there's still more to learn, I'll probably have to go through it. And I'll share it on the air and we'll see what happens. How about that? Thanks for listening today. I'll be right back with some closing comments and then I'll end the show and say goodbye. Be right back. Thank you for listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank two people that left reviews in iTunes. I don't think I've read this one yet. Janella102, thank you for your review. Very much appreciate that. And someone by the name of, this one should be interesting. It's either Babusa or Bub USA. Thank you so much for your 5-star reviews. I appreciate you. And thank you for valuing the show and reviewing it and letting the general public know that, hey, this is a pretty good show to tune into. I appreciate that. Thank you. I also want to thank Asha with Get Out of the Mess. Go to getoutofthemess.com or call 678-355-8777 and find out if this legal insurance plan is right for you. We pay like, what, $20, $22, $24, something like that for the family plan. It's really inexpensive, especially for what you get. And there's a whole lot I haven't even mentioned that they can handle. So I highly recommend you go to getoutofthemess.com or call Asha today. And I want to tell you about the Overwhelmed Brain book. It's on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's a physical book you can hold and read and take on a plane or take to a field and read by a stream while the birds are chirping. And it's a book about you. It's a book about helping you get to a place of full self-empowerment. But if you've been listening to this show for the last 3.5 years, you probably don't need it. Because everything I talk about on the show eventually ends up in the book. However, what I do with the book is I walk you through the process sequentially. Like, what's step one? What's step two? What's step three? And of course, you can highlight things. And I always like the idea of having a book in my hands. There's just something about opening to any page and going, yes, that's insightful. That's what I'm going to apply to my life. So I recommend the book. I'm a little biased. It's called The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers. Find it at your bookstore today. And I want to thank the patron members. If you're in the TOB patron program, thank you very much. In fact, we just had an episode I really liked doing. It was on procrastination and how to crush it. And I mean crush procrastination. I think it works for most people. I haven't tried it on everyone that I've ever met. But I've got some pretty neat ideas on how to crush procrastination. So if you're interested in something like that, or other private episodes, or worksheets, or group trainings, or even email coaching, consider joining the TOB patron program at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. It's not only a way to get all that stuff, but it's a way to give back to the show too. So if this show helps you out, then that's a neat way to show your support. And I do appreciate you. If you're in the patron program, thank you so much. You're a big part of helping this show continue and grow. And whether you're in the patron program or not, I want to thank you. If you've purchased a book or a worksheet or used the Amazon link on the website, that's a great way to give back too. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on the Amazon link every time you shop. Drag the button to your desktop, and every time you go to Amazon, click on that link, and that helps support the show as well. We definitely appreciate it. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. My final thoughts are going to center around what I've been going through, well, my girlfriend and I have been going through for the past week. Last week, she got foot surgery. And because of that, she's been incapacitated for a while. And because of that, I've had double duty around the house. And now I do my fair share of cooking and cleaning and keeping up with everything. And I think she appreciates that. But now I must do just about all of it. I'm not complaining about it. I'm saying that it's an interesting perspective that I didn't have before. The perspective is, wow, is this what it's like to be a single person raising a child? Now, that sounds kind of, I'm not comparing that because I appreciate doing this stuff for my girlfriend. This is only temporary. It's only going to last maybe, I don't know, a few more weeks before she can be able to get up and get around. But I just had this observation recently of like, wow, so this is what it's like. And, you know, I've never had children. So it's something that I've not been able to relate to. So I had a new perspective. I mean, I realized, wow, pretty much what happens when you have someone that really can't take care of themselves in many ways, you have to forego your own needs. You have to. If my girlfriend is hurting, I really can't say, I'm busy. I really can't say I'm reading a book right now. I really can't say I'm working right now. That's not an option. Those options, they tend to go away or be delayed. So my perspective has been more of appreciation for those of you who have to take care of children on your own, who have to take care of disabled people, who have to take care of people that really can't take care of themselves, young or old. I have a new appreciation for that because it changes your entire life. When someone else's needs supersede yours, when what they need is more important than what you need, then it's kind of the opposite of what I teach typically, isn't it? I mean, you may not know, but I typically teach that you need to take care of yourself first, and then you could take care of others. You have to make sure that you show self-compassion first before you take care of anyone else. And when you have someone that has a lot of needs, a high level of needs, sometimes you have to skip things for yourself. Sometimes you have to forego your own needs and take care of someone else because they need it more. But the difference is that person may have a disability. That person may be too young or too old or too challenged in some way to take care of their own needs. And whether you signed up for it or not, here you are foregoing your needs for them. Now, it's not a total foregoing. I mean, it's really more of a suspension of your needs until you can do it. But I've had many late nights because I've spent a lot of days doing things that are required for her to keep her foot iced and keep her fed and keep the house clean and all kinds of things that pop up throughout the day. And then I have to work kind of late at night answering emails at like 2 or 3 a.m. sometimes. And it was just eye-opening for me to go, wow, this is a lot of work. I don't know how some of you single people raising children do it. So what I'm going to say to you is, I applaud you. I respect you. I cannot believe how resilient you are. This is a new perspective for me. If you're a caretaker for anyone and people around you don't understand, I understand. And I've had it easy. She's a joy to serve. I love taking care of her. And it's still foregoing many of my needs or suspending many of my needs until I can get to them. I think that's an important lesson to take anywhere. It's sort of like a friend of ours was telling us, what restaurant was it? Oh, Waffle House. A friend of ours told us that he worked with some executives at Waffle House like in the 70s or something. And he said that when you're in, I forget, some high-level district office of Waffle House, you actually have to, once a year, work an entire week at a Waffle House yourself as this executive. So and that gives them an idea of what the front line goes through. That gives them a new perspective. That gives them exactly what they need so that when they make decisions as a whole for the whole of Waffle House, that they do it from a place of, I've been there. I think that's so important, is that when you're listening to someone's advice, hopefully they've been there. Hopefully they understand. Or if they haven't been there, there's a huge amount of empathy and sympathy and understanding of your position. And I love that story that the executives have to work a week at a Waffle House. I don't know if that still goes on. If you work at a Waffle House, let me know. But the idea that somebody has to do that is pretty cool. And you can tell Waffle House is one of those restaurants. I don't know if you've ever been to one. It's one of those restaurants that is a finely tuned machine. You can tell they've really got it down on getting people served, on cooking things in a certain way. I mean, you can see people cooking. It's like they're right there out in the open. And that gives that feeling of safety I was talking about, right? You feel safer when you can see your food getting cooked. Like, what are they doing to my food in the back room? I don't know if you've ever had that thought, but I have. And okay, like, did it fall on the floor before I got it? Well, at Waffle House, you see if food falls on the floor or not. So you feel pretty good knowing that you're getting food straight from the grill. And no, this isn't an advertisement for Waffle House. That's just what came to my mind. And it kind of relates to the story I was just telling. So I thought it was neat. I think it's neat to step in someone else's shoes and experience what they experience so that you can finally understand. Just another quick story. My girlfriend worked with this guy that said, "My wife has it easy. She stays home with the kid all day and does nothing." And I heard that and I was like, oh, what'd you say? She's like, "I didn't say anything. He has no idea." He has no idea what it's like. And even I was aware enough to know that it's a full-time job already, but I wasn't aware enough to know that it's a full-time job, plus you can't meet your own needs most of the time. I was like, whoa, that's new information for me, like I said, that I just learned recently. But to hear someone say, "My wife has it easy. She does nothing all day. All she has to do is take care of the kid." And he's like, "I would trade with her in a minute." And I'm thinking, buddy, you don't know what you're talking about. So keep that in mind. Whenever you think that someone else has it easy or they're not suffering, do what they do. See, you know, spend a week with them. See what it's like. And especially keep an open mind, because that will help you get a better understanding. And the more you understand, the more you get to step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. I want you to always take steps to grow and evolve. And that might mean spending a week on the front line at a Waffle House. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you are amazing.